Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Real spoilers powered by ReviewSTL.com.
Warning, the following film discussion will ruin the ending of any movie you haven't seen. Example, Bruce Willis is dead at the end of The Sixth Sense. See how I ruined it for you? Just like that. Here are a few more.
Silent breed is people!
I am the father.
Get it?
Real spoilers. You've been warned.
Broadcasting from the lush but not lavish studios located in the basement of the O'Keefe Institute for Advanced Film Snarkitude, this is Real Spoilers, episode 266, The Belko Experiment. The movie. We won't actually be conducting the experiment.
Oh, that's good, because I've seen the movie, buddy. And I hope that isn't the...
We all know I'd die first.
Who would, out of the Real Spoilers crew, who's the last one to live?
You.
I know. I wasn't going to say it. Yeah. I don't want somebody else to say it.
I mean, that's just a given. Like, you're a gun owner.
That's also true.
You're trained in these sorts of things.
Also correct.
I'd be the first to go.
I feel like I would want to...
I think Dan would run around in circles, and we would probably die.
Yeah, I feel like Dan would run us through, like...
We would have heart attacks before we got
exhaustion.
You can't hit a moving target?
I mean, he looks like he's pretty quick.
Do you see how much he runs?
He likes to run.
He runs a lot.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I think it's something like this. I would just be like, I'm not even going to try.
<It's> right. Like, the kind of like some of these people, like, all right, we'll get into it.
Yeah. So, real quick, let's go around the table and everyone can introduce themselves.
This is Joe.
This is Kevin.
And this is Tom. Quick shameless plugs. Don't forget, we're available on iTunes. You can go there, rate, review, subscribe, and join the League of Show Sharers at Facebook.com/RealSpoilers by liking our Facebook page and then sharing the show on your Facebook page. Or you could share it in real life. You could just go around and... Stack of things at Starbucks, like Kevin said. I don't know how we would quantify that and know that you've joined the League of Show Shares. Perhaps you could take a picture or something. I don't know.
Please.
I don't know.
Send us your picture of Starbucks cork boards with, no, with written
gonna,
hyperlinks.
If you're going to hang it up anywhere, hang it up in a movie theater.
That's true.
Before we dig into the movie too much, I would also want to point out that you should stick around to the end because Kevin sat down with the stars of the film, Michael Rooker and Sean Gunn, and he has interviews with both coming at the end of this episode. So there, I did our shameless plugs, and now we will dig into the movie proper.
De jure. So yeah, this movie has been kicked around, I think, for a little bit. From what I understand, this was going to be James Gunn's next movie if he didn't get Guardians.
So he had this idea since, I believe, somewhere around like 2009.
I believe it.
So, yeah. I mean, Guardians was 14. Obviously, he made it for a couple years before
you
that.
You got to wonder. So here's a movie about people that work in a cubicle farm type office environment, and they're all killing themselves,
yes,
killing each other,
right,
violently,
yes,
horrifically, watching these office place archetypes be
turned
and just brutally murdered,
yes,
in graphically violent ways. And then you look at this through the prism of, at one time, this gentleman was married,
yes,
to Pam from The Office.
Correct.
Interesting.
So like, maybe, I mean, that show was on for what, 8 seasons?
So 8 or 9.
8 or 9.
Yeah.
Like,
maybe probably, just because of his relationship.
Like, it just was top like of
it
mind.
Was in his, it was in his brain. Or, you know,
he came to him in a dream. You know, that's
think,
how he got this
you
idea.
You think people who, you know, you watch Office Space.
Pam in The Office has come to me in a dream of time.
Well, we hope you're not listening to this, James, since we do have interviews with your brother and Michael Rooker.
Or Jenna.
Like, I think he knows that his ex-wife was attracted.
His ex-wife.
At one time, he was attracted to her.
Yeah, that's right.
I think it was as amicable.
It was a mutual
as
thing,
a divorce
think,
can
yeah.
be. Like,
absolutely.
She, like, congratulated him on Twitter when Guardians of the Galaxy did so well. And, like,
yes, I believe
this. Do you see my ex-wife congratulating
no, no.
me for anything.
No, I believe they're still friends.
Now, she would probably also have to be literate to go onto the Twitter.
How does this work? I don't know.
But we should mention we do have interviews with James's brother Sean.
Look at that! Who's a main character?
And of course, James Gunn and Sean Gunn.
Ruined that.
But James and Sean Gunn are both from St. Louis.
Yep.
So I was able to talk with Sean and then also Michael Rooker, who's in the film. They'll both be here in St. Louis for Wizard World Comic Con, which is April 7th through the 9th. So if you are in St. Louis or live nearby, come check it out.
By Jason David Frank.
No, he's not here this year.
What?
Yeah, he's not a guest.
What? Thanks a lot, Wizard World connoisseur, Jason.
So now that I'll be sending this to Wizard World, I will be editing that out. But
I'm not calling Wizard World. It's like Jason David Franken. That's completely different. So this one starts off there. It's your typical office, like an office space where you see all of your characters
going to traffic,
going to work. So in this one,
but no gangster rap.
No gangster rap.
I support
his entire catalog.
Office Space did not
celebrate.
Celebrate his entire catalog. Get it right if you're going to make a quote.
Also starring a guy from this movie.
Yeah.
John McGinley is that guy in Office Space, and he's also in this.
Ah.
What do you mean? Well, that guy.
He's so.
Oh, that's the, talking the, to the two, the Michael two, Bolton. Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
I'm
yeah.
sorry, because I mean, when you said that guy, because I'm thinking like Michael Bolton, that wasn't him.
No. Like he's one of the two, talking like whatever him. Their name, like yeah, yeah. The two Teds or whatever.
No, the two guys that are interviewing Michael Bolton.
Correct.
And interviewing everybody.
And he is also in this as one of the crazy characters.
Bob's. Two Bobs.
The Bobs.
There we go.
Yeah.
Thank you. Because I'm like, how? But I was going to say Office Space did not have Corn Cob Man.
It does not.
So I mean, right there, this movie's off to a great start.
That is true.
And what I really like too is while they're driving into the office, they're playing like a Spanish version of "I Will Survive."
So any song in this movie is the Spanish version because they're in Mexico. Like it's the
they're not in Mexico. They're in Colombia.
Yeah. So it's like
Bogota, one building
with all these American employees, and we find out it's the government has funded this building. But yeah, like,
and its
all of the
job
songs,
ostensibly
right
is to facilitate like hiring internationally, like to get American companies working with these other companies, and like
right.
And so we know James Gunn has an affinity for music. I mean,
correct.
see Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 1 and soon to be Volume 2. And so the music, I think, in this movie is great, but they're all covers in Spanish.
Uh-huh.
And so I just thought, you know, and especially I Will Survive. We know this movie's about.
Wait, right. I thought Mamas and the Papas, they had covered the Spanish version of California Dreaming. I thought that's how that.
What?
Yeah, I was like, is that a thing? That's not a thing, is it?
Sometimes I'm a little too dry.
Yeah.
You need Dan here sometimes.
Yeah. So right off the bat, I'm like, man, I like that. I just like the fact I Will Survive. It fits the tone of the story that we know we're going to see.
Yeah.
But it's also set in Colombia. So we have that Spanish. So I thought the music choices were great.
Right. So you've got these military folks who are like checking everybody in, and they're kicking people out of line. So like if you haven't been with the company for very long, or you aren't like, what was the, there was another like caveat.
Well, they were kicking out people.
They were kicking out people that were from the country.
Oh, that's right. That's what it was. Yeah.
And so
like Mike, who becomes our main character, is just like, what is going on? Mm-hmm. They're just like, I don't know. There's some sort of weird bomb threat. And
he asked the military guys, why are you sending what's his name home? And he's like, pop your trunk. And these military guys are very abrasive. They're not friendly. They're not talking to them. They give commands, and they're like checking everybody's stuff over. And they also note that they're not the same guys that they're used to. So they have a crew of security.
Where's Barry? And he's just like, pop your drunk. He's like, okay. So they get everybody inside, and then your day kind of starts like any other day. It's you've got everybody kind of just saying hi to some people. John McGinley's being super creepy to the main girl.
Is he a creeper?
I love the instant message where he's just like, usually when people stop, like catch you staring at them, they usually stop.
And the next one she sends another message.
So I like that instant message because at that point when she wrote it, like I like how he interpreted it as flirting.
Right.
Yeah.
Because like when I read it, I was like, I couldn't tell, like, is this guy just kind of glazed over and staring at her and she's
misinterpreting.
Or like she's teasing him, or is she really mad, like, dude, you're creepy.
Yeah.
Like, and like as somebody who didn't know the relationship yet, like I wasn't sure how to read it. So sure. I thought it was a really well-crafted
line. It was. And also, I like the fact that they are, because that's a thing in office places now, is they all have like these instant messengers into their computers. So it's not like, you know, you're throwing a paper airplane trying to get somebody's attention.
There's
like,
inter-office messaging. All the phone apps, you know, I mean, I used to manage the phone system for a large company, and they have software where, you know, your contacts, you can dial through the computer and your phone rings.
Right.
But also it has instant messaging just built into it. So it's all integrated.
It's good stuff. I also like it's good.
I'm glad you had an office place that was integrated.
Yeah. It's, I mean, it's 2015.
Progressive. Thank you.
Yeah.
Very, very progressive.
Yeah. Yes.
So Mike shows back up and he's talking, and we find out that these two are a couple. I can't remember what her name was.
It's not an easy, it doesn't roll right off the tongue.
Leandra?
Unless you're Spanish, when you roll the R's, it probably will.
I think it's Leandra. So yeah, they're a couple, and she's like, look, you know, we're moving a little fast. I just got divorced. And he's like, yeah, whatever. So they have this cute little interactions with each other, and I liked them together. Like, I liked their
chemistry was good. Yeah,
it was good.
And I really like how he sets up the movie. Like, the nice thing is that there wasn't a ton of backstory. There wasn't a ton of exposition. You get a quick introduction to the characters, and then you're off to the races. Like, when things start up, and they never really stop.
They don't stop.
But I was actually surprised how quickly they started up. Because, you know, and we're about to get there. But it's like, you meet all the little people and you get the cute interactions. There's like,
wait, there are little people?
There are. Yeah.
I think they must have messed up the aspect ratio when I saw it, because they were not little people.
The broom closet was in 4x3.
That was the issue.
Yeah.
Oh, maybe you had the messed up aspect ratio.
So, you know, there's like 6 or 7 floors of this building. The boss, who is played by Tony Goldwyn plays the boss. So he's
recognized. He's in all kinds of stuff. He's also pretty good. He's a great actor.
Yeah. So he's up character at the 6th or 7th floor. You know, the CEO's got the top level office there. But we go to all these different floors and we get the interactions, you know, between all the coworkers. We figure out who's who and their relationships.
There's a lot of red herrings in this first 30 minutes. So, like, you see Michael Roker and the guy who was in The Dark Knight.
Yeah. The cop, the Jokerized cop in The Dark Knight.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He was the guy they thought was the Joker that Harvey Dent beats the crap out of.
Yeah.
And then you see, I'm trying to think of this guy's name. He was on Justified. Brent Sexton.
Yep.
Who was Vince, and he's kind of like the HR guy, and he's super nice, and he's talking to one of the new hires, and he's just like, did you get chipped? And she was just like, yeah. He's like, look, I know it's scary. Like, it's just, you know, this is kind of a dangerous place. They don't really like Americans here. Just in case something happens to you, we can find you. And I was like, well, that's going to be a thing.
Yeah.
And that's coming back to haunt somebody.
Yeah. And again, the neat thing about how this movie's written is I love that they introduce all these characters and it keeps you guessing, because going into this film, you don't know what is going on here. You know, the Belko experiment.
You also don't know who to trust.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Like, you don't know why these things are happening or who's running this so-called experiment, but you know people are going to start killing each other, right? And so the whole time you're thinking,
I want my money back.
Yeah, we're thinking,
don't worry, you're not getting your money back.
Tony Goldwyn plays the COO of this company, and you're like, is he in on this? Then I thought, is Mike in on this? Because he's kind of acting sketchy. Yeah. So you're like, who is in on this? And, you know, we'll eventually,
it,
I don't want to spoil it yet, but you're thinking, who is the one in on this whole thing? There's got to be someone on the inside, like, working this. There's an angle, right? So it does that to where it's not obvious and keeps you guessing.
So they get, your day is going completely normal, and then all of a sudden, the shutters, like, they're these giant mechanical shutters that start closing off all of the windows in this building, and everybody's like, what is going on? And then, you know, the security guy's like, I have no idea, like, there have been bomb threats before, like, maybe this is just a test. And then a voice comes over the loudspeaker and it's just like,
they have a half hour to kill two.
Oh, that's what it was. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then if you don't,
they
do
say
that,
you have 30 minutes to kill two of your coworkers. If not, there will be repercussions,
right? So then, of course, everybody's, you know, the
people are laughing at it,
right? Everybody, yeah. But like, even Mike is just like, I don't think this is a joke.
Yeah. The COO comes downstairs. Mike gets his people downstairs, and like, they're kind of concerned. Everyone else is joking and like, oh, you know,
yeah, it's
a big old joke. And you know,
they think that somebody has hacked into the system and is messing with them,
right?
And then as they're all standing there talking, all of a sudden the time runs out. And then,
well, we should talk about, first of all, so Sean Gunn plays this stoner
great
character. And
also, the guy, the other guy he's with, also from St. Louis.
The guy up top,
yeah,
the older guy, the big guy.
Radio DJ Smash.
Oh, yeah, that's his son. Asher Ben Ruby's son.
Yeah, yeah.
He was on ER.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
he was on...
He was Jerry on ER.
He was on Parker Lewis Can't Lose.
He was. That's
Kubiak.
Right.
That's funny.
Right.
I didn't realize that was he's from Smash's son.
Yes.
Wow, that's awesome. Yeah. Good. That's really cool. So they're up top, and Sean Gunn is like, think Scooby... Or Shaggy from Scooby-Doo, you know? And I think, you know, he's a very skinny guy, and he's smoking weed up on the roof. And so, like, I just think of him as kind of that character. And so they're up on the top, and people are... going up top, and they're like,
well, you got like Big Head from Silicon Valley's up there, and you've got some other characters who are who are just like, what are you doing up here? He's like, yeah, man, just like, did you even read that thing that you signed? Like, they can do whatever they want to, and do whatever. He's like, ah, whatever.
And he's just blowing everything off. He's like, I'm cool, man, you know, this is, you know, it's just a joke and whatever.
And then time runs out
and the girl I think that was like, just right talking to him,
just
her
boom.
Head explodes and blood all over him as he's, you know, basically brushing it all off. And
so people are assuming that it's a sniper,
especially because the first one happens on the roof,
right?
And there are guards in the shed across the way.
Yes. Yeah.
And the other person, their head blows up in the lobby. So they all start running and everyone's get down. And you're led to believe the same thing because, you know, you just see someone's head get shot or blown up. So you're thinking, oh my gosh, they're shooting at these guys.
Yeah.
And they realize, like, they're running around, but they realize there's no one with guns. There's no, like,
there's
all
no
the
way
people
for them
inside.
To shoot anybody.
Yeah. And I think, I can't remember if it's Mike or not, but someone kind of looks around the corner and is like, there's no one here.
Well, I think Mike gets up. And he's just like, look, I think you are. I think it is Mike. Because he's just like, there's nobody here.
And then is it Mike or is it Tony Goodwin that pokes around with the pen? I think Mike goes to the back of...
Oh, no, it's Tony. It's Tony Goodwin.
It's Tony Goodwin.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. Because we do find out that he is a former Army Ranger.
Which I was going to say makes sense because at first I'm like, okay, I know this is a horror movie and it is a movie, so it doesn't necessarily have to be completely believable. But if someone's head's exploded, I can't imagine a bunch of office workers coming up with a pencil and just being like, oh, brain matter. But this guy, but the COO is ex-military.
He's ex-military.
And is highly trained. And so it makes more sense that he would be the one to go to a dead body.
So he's fishing around in the head. And this is where Mike goes, that's not a gunshot wound, like, that's an explosion.
Yeah, it because parts of the top are still hanging there,
right?
You know, like, this
it was
happened,
like, it was blown outwards
inside. Yeah, yeah.
Back into the left.
Yeah.
Like, this is a brutal film.
Yeah. So Mike realizes that it's probably these little things that are in the back. So he goes, like, he grabs, like, an X-Acto knife.
Oh, man.
And he starts cutting into the back of his head.
When he grabs this thing, this is
I don't think he gets in there. Like, because he's trying to get it out.
Big, deep cut, though. But
like, the voice over the system is like, if you don't stop doing what you're doing in the next 10 seconds, I'm going to detonate the thing. So he's free. And his girlfriend is banging on the door. And finally, he just drops in.
But one of the neat things this movie does. So this is directed by a guy named Greg McLean.
Greg McLean.
He did something called Wolf Creek 1 and 2.
Have you seen Wolf Creek?
I will say he also sang American Pie.
That different guy?
Is that a different?
I think it's Don.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, sorry. Yeah. Sorry.
I believe it's Don.
I just thought that was like an Italian moniker. He's Don McLean. But when he
I see what you're saying. Yeah. Okay. Okay. I was like, Don. Yeah, it's just okay.
So it's the director
is Corleone.
Greg. Yeah. His name's Greg McLean, and he directed Wolf Creek.
Wolf Creek is this Australian horror torture porn movie that is really good. Like, I never saw Wolf Creek 2, but the original Wolf Creek was one of those ones that came to Blockbuster. Like, didn't get a wide release in the States. Came to Blockbuster, and I was just like, if you like these movies. Like, there's more to that movie. Like, the torture porn
just,
is there.
Yeah.
But, like, there's more to this. Like, you should check this. Like, that was a really good movie.
So, I mean, you can tell this guy's a skilled filmmaker.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of the shots and just the way the movie is built and paced and everything. But, you know, when you see Mike get the X-Acto knife, and it's one of those that opens, it's protected, and you slide up, and the knife pops out.
Do they make X-Acto knives that don't slide up?
It's like a carpet. Yeah.
Cutter. Oh, I
like
see. Okay.
Yeah, it's a box cutter.
It's not an X-Acto
because
knife.
Some of them flip open or whatever. So, but, you know, it focuses down on his hand holding it. You know, it's a great shot, and you see him slide the knife out, and you're just like, he's going to dig that into the back of his head. And knowing what this movie is, we're going to see it.
Oh, yeah.
And so he starts
digging
back there.
I figured
I want my money back. Yeah.
Don't worry.
Okay.
All right.
There's no money. There are no refunds. Yeah.
This is going back to an old...
We didn't even talk about when the movie opens, very, very beginning, it opens, it's made by Orion Pictures, and it opens
with the
old school Orion logo.
They have never changed their logo.
I think that they went back and got the original logo.
Oh.
I mean, because that was even, like, still fuzzy.
It was.
Like, I almost got up and adjusted my tracking.
Like, I was in a theater. Orion is responsible for some great... like great 80s and 90s.
I thought I went to go see RoboCop re-released in theaters. Like when this movie started, am I watching RoboCop?
Spath and I saw it together, and I was just like, is that the old, like, are they back? And he thinks that Orion has now like joined Blumhouse, and like they kind of co-produced, like Orion isn't it like the heavyweight that they were,
sure,
but I think that they have joined Blumhouse and like they do co-produce
these
stuff.
These companies kind of morph over time, because I mean I've seen movies that are produced by Screen Gems.
Oh yeah.
Which I know Screen Gems is the production company that made The Monkees.
Oh.
And obviously there is no relation between the current Screen Gems and the Screen Gems that made The Monkees. But
it's Sony's horror wing now.
Yeah.
What is Screen Gems?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Because Screen Gems back in the day, they did The Monkees. I think they did The Flying Nun. They might have done Gidget.
Interesting.
They did a lot of that kind of stuff. And they were so big, like when The Monkees came out, the record label they were on was called Cold Gems, because it was affiliated with Screen Gems. Like it was like that's they had enough juice.
Interesting.
To do that.
It was also, I remember when I saw the, again, just to go back to The Expendables, that first one had the old Millennium logo. And I was like, is this an homage? Like, because Millennium was responsible for, like, the old Van Damme movies and, like, those old action flicks.
Right.
And I was like, are they just throwing that in there for fun? Like, is that what they're, because this is an old throwback? Yeah. But
well, you know, I mean, James Gunn is a huge horror fan.
Oh,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
So he wrote Dawn of the Dead for Zack Snyder.
I did know that, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But, I mean, that's not even old.
He also wrote Scooby-Doo.
That first Scooby-Doo was a solid kids movie.
It was.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the reveal at the end.
The reveal was great.
Fantastic.
Well, so Dawn of the Dead is my favorite. The original was my favorite zombie movie of all time. And then Zack Snyder remade it, and James Gunn wrote it. And, I mean, it is hard when you have nostalgia for a classic horror film like a Romero, Dawn of the Dead,
mm-hmm.
and then to have the 2004 version come out and be so good. And that's what put Zack Snyder on
that
the map.
That movie had no right to be that good.
It was so good. Yeah. And so, I mean, James Gunn loves horror. And that goes back to, he used to write trauma movies.
Yeah.
Like James Gunn.
Yeah, that's right.
He has a huge affinity for horror. So when you talk about movies like RoboCop and other things that are
Ryan. Did you ever see Slither?
Well, yeah, Slither
is great. And it's a throwback to a throwback. Like that is.
And that's,
Ed Wood throwback.
And I think that's where Michael Rooker met James Gunn.
Yeah.
And so they had not known each other previously, but now they're close friends.
Who's the good guy? Oh, it's Nathan Fillion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So obviously James Gunn has a huge love for horror. And so, you know, now he's doing big movies like Guardians of the Galaxy and Guardians 2.
I think in its own way, Slither was a better version of 30 Days of Night than 30 Days of Night was.
Which is such
a great concept.
Such a great, like
that just got
those
squandered.
Books,
yeah.
Good luck. Like if you have those, seal them up. Because those, I think it's like only a 4-issue run, and man, those things blew up like
very limited release.
Not even that. Like it was just one of those that like I would compare it to The Walking Dead. Like that first Walking Dead, the reason it's so expensive now is because it was a low print. So what happened
is nobody expected it. It was
there were two books indie at the same time. So there was Wake the Dead by Steve Niles, who did 30 Days a Night, and then there was The Walking Dead. And there was just like people thought that The Walking Dead was Wake the Dead.
Oh.
And what Image, it was a super low print run, and what Image did is they said it was returnable, so like you can tear the covers off and send Image the covers back, and they will refund the retailers whatever they
spent.
They
did that all the Walking Dead
number one, the only Walking Dead number ones are out there. That's all you're ever gonna find.
Oh my gosh,
because all the other ones were destroyed.
Yeah.
So like that's jeez, why that book is a $300,000, but like a $3,000 book. If you get a 9, like a 10-0,
a real one with a cover on it,
$3,000 book.
Yeah,
wow,
easy. I sold mine.
Yeah. So I think that's why, you know, working with Blumhouse and Orion, you know, and that goes back to his love for the older horror films, and not just horror, but the 80s action, the gory type of film, and so it was very fitting to have.
I love
seeing
it. It was great.
Yeah.
It was fun. So. They're starting to figure out what the hell is happening, and then you know the voice comes back over the speaker, and they're like, "If you don't kill 20 people,
30
is it 30? Man, they're trimming the fat quick."
Yeah,
and that's the thing. They get into it. What I love about this movie:
30 people in 2 hours,
or they'll kill
60.
Yeah,
that's right.
What I love is that it's a down and dirty little horror movie. It's not long. It's not dragged out.
I like how it owns what it is.
Yeah.
It has no pretension. No, it is like a harder version of Cabin in the Woods.
Yeah.
Like, that's what I mean. If you want to do a double feature, like, do this. Like, this and Cabin in the Woods will fit very well together.
But obviously, you know, James Gunn knows how to write it, and then Greg McLean knows how to direct a movie like this, because this movie had the tension, you know? So it wasn't just like a bunch of people killing each other and you're laughing and it's like, like just from the moment where Mike is digging in his head and they give him 10 seconds and you don't know if his head's about to explode.
Right.
Like, you don't know what he's going to do. They're very good at building the tension.
When they start killing off characters, we're just like, well, I thought they would be around for a while.
Well, you know, for sure.
Since it's essentially a cast of character actors,
it
does benefit from that because, you know, if one of these guys was a name, you'd be like, well, they're not killing off the name.
I mean, the big name is Michael Roker.
And he was number one.
Three. Yeah, they actually.
Someone killed. He was the first.
The first name kill.
No, but the first that someone killed, they killed the first two.
Oh, okay.
Oh, I see
I'm
what
saying,
you're saying.
Like, the first one murdered, even accidentally.
Wasn't accidental.
He didn't mean to kill him. He, like, reacted. So the guy from Dark Knight, they're
Joker.
Maintenance guys. So Michael Rooker.
I think they were lovers. There was like the like I either that or he or like Michael Roker was like taking care of that kid.
I think
they
were good friends.
That kid was off kilter. Like Michael Roker, I feel like either if they weren't.
I think he was like a father figure to him.
What?
Was he a hidden father figure?
But yeah, so like Michael Roker is trying to figure out how to get the hell out of here.
You could be both. Haven't you heard that George Michael song?
That's true.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
Either way, it doesn't matter, but...
It does matter. It's horribly offensive.
It is.
I'm going to go see Beauty and the Beast.
Does not come into play in this plot at all. So that's my point. Thank you for your observation, Joe.
Yes, you're welcome. They're sitting there and they're trying to figure out what's going on, and then
the AC's down. They're like, we're going
to fix the AC.
And Michael Rooker gives him a big wrench. Yeah. You know.
Oh, so they are.
Gives
him the old big wrench.
I was right.
Gives him the old big wrench.
The old big wrench.
And so this kid's just freaking out.
I can tighten, but I can also loosen.
That's right.
So this kid's freaking out, though. I mean, he's, you know,
Michael. It turned out it was a crescent wrench.
Ow! Ow! Ow.
Oh, you think that's bad? Right. try my cross the bear.
Yikes!
Got a plumber's wrench.
That's you, poor, poor bastard.
Yeah, I mean, it's good and it's bad.
It you know, it has its advantages.
Yeah, I mean, I don't like to brag.
Please tell us the plot, John. I'm gonna let you continue.
So they're trying to fix the AC unit, and this kid is starting to freak out. Like, he's starting to break, and then so I think like Michael Roker turns away from him. Or they have some interaction.
Well, he keeps trying to comfort him.
Oh,
and
that's
go
right.
Closer.
He's like, hey, man, you're okay.
Like,
you're okay. And he just blasts him in the face with this wrench and just like
leaving
it easy.
That's a poor choice of words.
But I mean, like, yes, you're correct. It was a poor choice of words. And he leaves this like
dent, crater.
That's like, the only thing I can describe. I mean, it's like he cracks his skull.
It's not
open.
Like a fountain of blood comes out of his head. Like, it is a indent.
Yeah. And he was just like, and Roker is just like, wait,
softball.
What happened? I thought we were talking.
Yeah.
And where are, what's going on?
And just
like,
slides.
He's like, give me a second. Let me think. And then he slides. And like when they kill Roker, I was just like, well,
yes,
the gloves are off.
And
then.
I mean, Rooker's a huge name. Like, in
I wouldn't
this
go
film.
So far as
for a movie like
no,
this.
I think,
yes.
No,
yeah. Yeah.
This,
okay.
But
yeah.
In this cast, he's a big name. And so when he was the first one, I mean, cause the other two were extra, not extra.
They
the
weren't
two were
important.
Yeah,
you don't know. They weren't names. The other two were just part of the cast. And so...
I think you could call them extras. I mean, there's obviously a lot of...
Background characters, So Rooker was the first name to go. And when they did that, being the first death, you're right. The gloves are off and you know that there's no one's safe. And
right.
That's really cool.
So at the same time, you've got this girl. The girl who was like the new hire is running around. And she sees this whole thing happen and she makes a noise.
My prediction, though,
I thought
from the beginning
that she was going to make it.
Yes.
Like, I thought she was going to be.
Thought
I thought
the new hire on her
the...
first day was going to be the last one to live because of like. So you know, we get it.
I thought she was going to be Steve Buscemi in Reservoir Dogs.
Yeah, that's
where, like she gets a like.
I
she
really
doesn't
thought,
have the thing. Like,
I know.
You know.
I really thought, but also you know, we'll get into more of the stipulations as we go through, and as more and more people die. But like, I thought that through a technicality, she was going to be the winner out of
well,
there.
Well, I thought so. I thought that she lied. Where he asks, he's like,
because she did give a weird answer. Yeah, you're right, because when
she
he asked
gives
you
a non-answer,
chip,
she's like,
nah.
Did you go to the doctor?
Yeah.
And she was like, yeah.
Oh, for that thing? Or what?
Yeah, yeah, I went.
Yeah.
And I was just like, she didn't go to the doctor.
Yeah, that's interesting. Okay, yeah. So I liked her character a lot, and I thought it was interesting that, you know, there's...
Because she's constantly, you see her constantly throughout the movie.
Yeah.
Like, she's hiding, or she's doing other things. And
it's her first day. Yeah. I did see this movie with Chris, and I turned to him, and I go, dude, if you ever thought you had a bad first day on the job, could you imagine...
This poor chick.
Yeah.
She's like, they're killing each other.
Yeah.
Yeah. So she sees this all go down. So
I'm
like,
dying here on my first day.
Yeah. Right.
You're killing me.
You're killing me, Smalls. So like, she sees this go down, and then like the guy goes after her.
Oh man.
And they get into a tussle, and like she slams his head. Like, I think she pushes him backwards.
Yeah.
And he bounces his head off of like
into three nails sticking.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And
so like he's got blood coming out of his eyes,
out of his mouth, and everything.
And just like,
and he falls forward, and it's similar to that screwdriver scene.
Oh.
Yeah. John
oh
Wick.
Yeah. Yeah,
no,
yeah,
it is.
Yeah.
It's similar to where they pull the screwdriver out, except this way his head comes off the
wall. Right.
And you see the three screws covered in blood.
Yeah.
And so.
And then so we go back up, like this is, and then like I said that chick pops up,
yeah,
occasionally throughout the movie.
I almost feel like she's the audience, because it's her first day on the job.
Yeah, so, I can see that.
Well, they certainly use her for some exposition.
Yeah,
correct.
Yeah.
So he explains
the
chip in the
right,
head.
Right.
So she's us. She's the one that, like, we're here at Belko for our first day. That's her purpose.
Right.
You know?
So then we go back upstairs, and there's like a meeting between Mike, the guy from HR, the COO.
Who's the friend, the British guy? I didn't recognize him. I mean, I don't know
British
who he is.
British guy. I don't know.
His friend, Mike's friend.
Another guy.
Bigger guy.
Yeah.
Like, built.
Is he British
guy.
Or Australian?
I thought he was Australian.
Maybe Australian, and maybe the Wolf Creek. Maybe he's in.
Oh, maybe. His, that's possible.
Yeah.
And then John McGinley, they're all having this conversation where it's just like, if we don't kill 20,
30.
If we don't kill 30, they're going to kill 60. So Mike's like, we cannot kill.
We're not even talking about
this. Like, this isn't a thing. So, like, this is where you get a little tension between him and the girl, where she's just like, do we kill the 30 or do we wait and let them kill 60? Like, what do you, and of course, the army guy's
tell
like,
why he's the CEO.
Right. The army guy's like, we're killing 30.
Yeah. He's like, we're going to kill some people.
Yeah.
That's what we're going to do.
So,
but we're going to do it.
And the character you're talking about that Tony Goldwyn plays is named Barry Norris. That's such a COO name.
It is
such
a very,
you know
yeah,
what I mean? Like,
yeah,
such a boss name, Barry Norris.
Barry Norris.
You know, it just.
What was the guy from Office Space?
Damn. Oh, Lumberg.
Lumberg. Yeah.
Lumberg. Bill
Phil.
Lumberg.
Phil. Bill?
I thought it was Bill Lumberg. Yeah, it's Bill Lumberg.
Is it Bill Lumberg?
Yeah. All right. That, and who was that? That was
Gary Cole.
Gary Cole.
Yeah.
Gary Cole would have been, like, if you put Gary Cole in this role.
You couldn't,
role,
just because
no,
opposite,
no, no, no.
You can't.
But, I mean, like you could, and it would turn this movie on its head where Gary Cole turns into, like, the crazy guy.
Yeah.
I love Gary Cole.
Like, I'm glad,
he's so,
like,
good.
He would have been great, and it's nothing against him. I'm
just glad they didn't
put Lumberg in this movie, because that's too
sure.
meta
no,
for
no,
Office.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
You have John C. McGinley and, like...
Yeah. McGinley was... So, yeah, McGinley... Oh. And McGinley's just like, yeah, we're going to kill everybody.
His creep meter is up to 11, and it's awesome. Like, in this... You know what I mean? Like,
right.
He is so good in that role.
I do like... So, there's the security guy has keys to an... They just happen to have an armory in the... in the building.
But they're in a dangerous situation.
They
like, they say
when
that
when you find out what's in there, though,
yeah, but
you're
they
just like, well, they planned this
one again. And in the, you know, HR exposition, he says that, you know, the whole purpose of the chips. I mean, you got to realize that all 80 employees that are there have chips in their head because kidnappings are such a big
deal.
So to have a security guard on duty and to have an armory, I mean, it makes sense
right.
in this situation. It's not like the Applebee's in the manager's office has a crate of guns. You know, it's a little bit different.
Have you been to Applebee's? It makes sense.
Well, it depends where.
That's
See,
true,
my Applebee's in Baldwin is probably different than your Applebee's.
We call ours Crapplebee's.
There you go.
That should be the name for all of
that,
them.
I mean, actually, we call all of them.
Yeah,
but yeah,
I got into a fight inside that Applebee's.
Shocking.
Yeah. Guy stole money off of a table.
And did you think I was talking about other patrons? I meant because you go there, that's why they need the armor. Was I not clear about why?
Years. No, like this dude still, like we were sitting there eating and this dude like walked by, like the table like in front of us had their checkout, like, you know, had their cash on the thing, and this dude walks by and just takes it. And then somebody goes, "Hey, that guy doesn't work here."
Yeah.
And I was like,
I've never seen that happen, but I've always thought about that when people leave cash for a tip. I go,
it wasn't,
someone could just steal
it. It was
that.
The whole thing. They paid their whole tab in cash.
Oh, that's awful. And I've always wondered if that happens.
So I go out after the guy and we get into a fist fight, like in one of the bushes, and like I tackle him and I take him.
Were you a cop at this
time? Yeah.
Okay.
So like I'm sitting there, I've got his arm behind his back and whatever, yeah. And he was just like, "Just let me go, man. Just let me go." I was like, "Fuck you, no! Like you just made me fight you for no reason."
If you would have just given me the money, just, maybe
I'd
yeah.
let go. He's like, "Oh no!" So the cops show wait, up and they
did you arrest Pee Wee Herman?
I did. It was very awkward.
Wow. I was like, "I used to love Pee Wee Herman that just went through puberty."
I used to love your show, man. Like, this is so weird. So I go back inside,
and
like,
this was actually a fight that went into the movie theater, right? You don't
yeah,
know.
Yeah,
there was a whole right. cover up story, but
so there's a happy ending.
Well, for me, yeah, is, you know, I'm the poor guy in front of me.
For Joe, he just admitted to it.
That's And also, so we go back inside, and the guy,
did you
like,
order extra butter on your popcorn?
Yeah. Why is the back of my head? What the hell? So like, I go back inside, and like the bartender gives me like 2 free beers, and then we get our check, and it's like $50 off of our check. And I was like, well,
how did you spend more than 50
bucks? Well,
there
was like
Applebee's.
7 of us there.
This is before 2 for $20.
I stand by my statement.
Yeah. That's true.
So, yeah. So the security guard.
Oh, ghetto bees.
So pause.
Yep.
So the security guard has a key to
the armory. Yeah, he's got a key to the
basically.
Armory. And then,
it's,
so like,
it's like a locker of weapons. Yeah, it's not the, really a whole
the
armory.
Boss,
but,
like,
yeah.
This is the point where the boss is like, you should give me the key. And I was like, don't give him the key.
Yeah.
Whatever you do, don't give that
and
guy
again,
the
like,
key.
And again, like, I like the writing here because this is just not a situation you typically get because he's like, I'm the boss. And he goes, well, I quit.
Yeah.
Which is great. I thought it was great because it's like, when this is over, do you think I still work here?
Right.
Like, I'm not coming back to work tomorrow. Yeah, like, no, if we live through this, I don't work here anymore. Yeah. Like I choose to not.
I will take my severance package.
Right.
I will go back to the United States and try not to have nightmares about this.
Good luck. I'm sure you'll make it.
But yeah, I liked his where he's just like, yeah, I quit. Yeah. And like,
and now then the guy walks
the
away.
The boss was like, I don't know what to do with that. All right. So now we're starting to develop factions. So you've got Mike, his girlfriend, the big guy from HR, the security guy, and then some like maybe.
That's about it for them, because then there's
you've
another
got the
group
older,
of...
the older redhead lady, the heavyset redhead lady, who was in Jason
But she
X,
was with that young kid, who was kind of funny. He looked familiar, too, but the
big
young kid...
So that you know that he was on Silicon Valley.
Oh, he's that's him. Okay.
Yeah, he was Big Head.
Okay.
He's the guy
He's
that,
pretty funny. I like
oh,
him.
Oh, man. Yeah. So that he's... They steal, like... So the Google company, like, they think that he is the reason that this thing worked, like, the... Like your guy, your main characters, they think that he is the guy who created whatever, like Pied Piper.
Yeah.
So they take him away and they keep him off. But then they realize he's completely worthless. But they keep somehow. Yeah.
His name's Josh Brenner.
Somehow they keep promoting him. And he's like, I don't know what's going on. Like, he's an idiot on the show. He's like, I this is my money and I have all of this. And it's a very, like, he's hilarious.
So
he's great on
the
show.
It's like him with the redhead and there's like all the floors kind of have their own faction because they work together, you know?
Yeah.
And so they don't have 6 or 7 factions, but the main ones that you see are like ones that group together.
We called it kind of like Battle Royale.
Yeah.
It's kind of.
Well, that's definitely an inspiration. I think even in the marketing of this, I mean, they own it. It's like, this is Battle Royale and Hunger Games and...
Gremlins 2.
It
is kind of Gremlins 2.
He is in an office,
that's
like,
true.
Right?
That's
I mean,
true.
That's funny. You know what's funny? I was just thinking a couple days ago, I think Friday night, I'm like, man, I want to see Gremlins 2 again.
It's a great movie. That's a good movie.
I always watch Gremlins, like, around Christmas time, and then I don't watch Gremlins 2.
Gremlins 2 around President's Day.
It's such a different movie.
Yeah.
It's like, completely different
I mean,
movie.
They just went in such a different direction. That it's
my favorite is that Phoebe Cates line. I love that speech in that second one so much, where she's going on about President's Day.
Yeah,
it's so good.
So yeah, I want to watch it. It's just like I always think to watch one and don't go to two. But
two is just so crazy. Like, I don't know how else to describe it.
It's a fun movie, but it's just so...
It's so different.
Like, so different.
I can definitely see why the first one, they invented PG-13 after that. Because the fact that it's PG and not R is like...
Oh, well, there's a whole scene that they cut where... One of the gremlins, not Mogwai, but the gremlin, they cut the
Mohawk?
Head off.
Stripe?
Spike.
Yeah. Stripe.
Spike.
Stripe.
Is it Stripe or Spike?
Stripe, because he has
he's got a stripe.
The Mohawk. It's
oh,
a stripe.
I thought it was Spike. Either way.
It's Stripe.
You're thinking of Snoopy's cousin.
That's what I was thinking of.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. You know the army vet and his wife, right?
Yeah.
They were going to kill them both. And, like, they were going to kick one of the heads down the steps.
Oh, God.
Like, they were going to decapitate one of them and kick the head down the steps. And they were just like, no.
I'm just saying, I get
so
it. Spielberg knows how to toe the line.
So the scene where she's in the chair, that was supposed to be the head rolling down the steps.
Oh, yeah.
Nice. Yikes. So, yeah. So they've developed factions, and then they're going to break into... So your main guy
show business.
Ta-da.
There's no business like show. And this is where the show tunes start.
That's right, yeah. In Spanish.
Spanish,
yeah.
Yeah.
So they're using
it's all from this. It's all the soundtrack to Evita.
Yeah. They're going to break into the armory. And then, so they're, you know, again, a crisis of faith where Mike, and like, he kind of says, he's like, we're not doing it. We're not doing this. We're not killing anybody. So that he turns off the blowtorch. Like, yeah. he breaks the blowtorch, so they can't get in.
Yeah, they're like, you have the keys, whatever, we're breaking in.
Right.
And so, yeah, and so did you mention that, so the COO has recruited, like, all the...
crazy people.
The, yeah, all the strong and, like, yeah, unstable people. So not just John McGinley's character, but then, like, the big bearded guy that, you know, kind of
he's
a
always,
tough guy.
He's always a bad guy. Yeah. That guy's always a bad guy in everything
yeah.
that he's
yeah.
done.
Yeah, so it's like, that's their little group of...
And yeah. then you've got... yeah, so the Australian
and
guy
the
joins
boy.
Them, too.
I don't know who he is. The guy that looked at the new girl, you know, she's staring at him through the cubicle. It's got, like, longer
oh,
hair.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
He's kind of on their
well,
team.
Well, he lets her live.
Yeah.
He sees her later and lets
I think,
her live
well,
again.
That connection, yeah. yeah. I mean, that's what kind of set that up. But he's on the team for a little bit.
Right. For a little bit. Yeah. So, yeah. So there's some dissension among the group of them. And I'm trying to think.
Well, this is when the security guard pulls a gun.
Oh, that's right. Okay,
so,
that's how they get the gun. That's
yeah,
right. That's
so,
right.
So they're basically like, I mean, they're trying to get into the armory, and the guy, security guard, pulls a gun on them and says, stop that right now, you yeah. know, and you know, the COO, this is at this point, that's when you're like, all right, this guy's not messing around.
No.
Like, he has turned from friendly boss man to like,
because yeah, he starts off pretty nice.
Yeah, he is.
He does.
Because he starts off like,
and he's
let's
caring.
Stay calm.
Yeah.
Like, it's no big deal.
Well, even like, and he walks in on the two, like, making out, and he just kind of gives them like the nod and the wink.
You don't know his history yet, and you also think like, yeah, he's a good boss, but like, his training kicks in, and he realizes, I mean, they've given them 2 hours to kill these 30 people, or
right.
60 die, which is a majority of the people. And so he's thinking, like, yeah, sure, he doesn't want to go kill innocent people, but also double will die anyway
sure.
if you don't. So,
sure.
I mean, he's being logical about
and that's,
it.
And then Mike's girlfriend is kind of in the same boat,
yeah,
where she's just like, 30's better than 60.
And this is where the experiment kicks in. I mean,
yeah.
this is called the Bechdel experiment, and we'll get into that more, but it's in the title of the movie. This is a social experiment with these people. And so the question is, what would a group of just normal office workers do when
right.
given these directives?
Directives. So they end up, they're running around.
Well, they leave, and they're like, let's go, and
yeah.
then, you know, the bad guys, let's call them, I mean, their group's
they
the bad guys, they are not happy with that, and so later on, they're in a stairwell,
yeah.
and the...
They knock Mike down the stairs, they think they've killed Mike, because they knock him down the stairwell,
and
they
take the gun.
Well, then they stab...
The security guard
who was just like, well, it was like,
well, because John McGinley says, give me the keys.
He's
and
like,
he says,
no.
You want them? And he drops them
yeah,
down.
Yeah, he drops
the stairs,
them all the way down.
And then he just
he
stabs them.
Him.
Yeah.
And it's just like, well, I thought that guy was going to be around for a little bit. Apparently not.
He lasted for a while.
He did, yeah.
Especially for a black guy,
for a black guy in a horror movie.
I think that was, again, like not following the conventions, you know?
Right, right.
You know, James Gunn didn't want to kill him off first. And
yeah.
that's, I mean, and that's a small, small part of the cleverness of the writing. But you know what I mean? He's not going to just do conventional tropes like
sure.
that.
So they gather everybody in the base in the main, you know, in the main thing, and they say, like, they start doing, like, all right, if you're,
well, so we talk about the armory, so they
yeah,
get
so
into
they
the,
get
armory.
The armory, and there's four guns and four clips, like, that's it.
I think there's more than that, because
he takes extra clips.
He gives them one per gun,
right.
and then takes the extras,
right, that's right,
you know, he's the man.
Yeah. So he gets everybody downstairs, and he just says, if you have kids.
So first of all,
kids under a certain age.
Stand, kids under 18.
Well, step
stand
up.
To the left.
Well, and then all these people step up and they go over here.
Yeah.
If you're over 60,
come here.
You go over there.
Go stand to the right.
And I was like, well, those people.
So there's, yeah. And so you see what he's doing again. I mean,
I really thought they were going to have a part where, because there's a lady in a wheelchair floating around.
Yeah.
I thought it was going to be like, wheelchair.
Yeah.
Yeah, over here.
I think that
would have liked a scene where it turned out the lady in the wheelchair had children under 18. And so
doesn't know what to do
now. What do you do?
Yeah,
because
right.
it's like they're gonna look at her as like, well, she's weak, so prune her.
Yeah.
But you know,
she's got kids.
I think this movie is so smart in the way that it really makes you think. So you know, it's not just a slasher film. It's not a torture porn. Anything?
No,
any stretch of the imagination.
I mean, no, yeah,
but it's not just that, because it makes you think though. As I'm watching this movie, and I'm sure you did, and all the people watching this movie, what would you do in this situation, right? Because you get it. You get the COO's point of view, and
I would
you get
just
Mike's point
hide
of view.
Somewhere. That's what I would hide and wait.
Like the girl. I think the new girl is smart. But think about it. So like Mike is like, we can't just kill innocent people. The COO isn't just a crazy murderer yet. But you know, he's like, okay, kill 30 or 60 die. Like, I get it. I mean, if they're going
to
do it anyway.
Once they've proven that they can kill you whenever they want, you kind of have to play by their rules.
Right, you're not having, I mean,
and so
unless
I thought,
you want to be next.
And I thought the scene where they get systematic is, it's like, that's probably the best way to handle it.
Well, that's what
it.
He says. He's like, I will do it. Like, and that's, like, he wasn't doing it because he was crazy. He's like, I'm the boss.
And that's
what I like.
Like, he was, in his own way, he was right. that he's like, I'm going to relieve you of having to make this moral choice.
Correct.
And I'll do it for you. Down to the actually pulling the trigger.
Right.
Yeah.
So they get them all. So they've got, and then Mike,
and there's
this,
eight.
Well, yeah.
All they have is eight.
They start picking
and
more.
They need 30. So that's when they go and they just start selecting.
Right.
I mean, just kind of arbitrarily.
And
at
the last possible second, Mike is like the last one that they pick.
I think the girl is staying there like, no, don't pick him. Don't pick him.
Well, and also they realize that he is
a threat.
A threat.
Mike
to everybody.
Yeah, Mike is their antagonist. You know, from their point of view, he's the one that will stop them.
Right, so they get them all lined up, and then they just start blowing their brains out. Like, I don't know what else.
Go down the line.
Bam, bam, bam.
Mike is John Gallagher Jr., who was in 10 Cloverfield Lane. He's the guy in that.
Oh, I thought
that's
he looked familiar. Okay.
Which is such a great movie. I mean, all three of those actors. There's like three people in the
movie.
And some
aliens.
Yeah. So,
spoilers.
I mean, he was excellent in that.
Yeah.
So,
he was good in this. Yeah, he was good in this,
again,
too.
This cast has a lot of people in it. I mean, for a movie with as many characters as they got some decent names.
They do.
You know?
So, they're going down the line, and they get to Mike. And I don't, like, the power cuts out.
Well, Mike tells the Australian guy, he says,
oh, he's talking to him. He's like,
friends, give me your gun.
And he was like, he's trying to take my gun. And I was like, stop being such a little bitch.
But you know that, like, if he helped him, the Barry would have just shot the Australian. You know, it's like, he was trying to save himself at that point, where instead of helping him, where you think he's going to help him, right? Like, because you see the guy's breaking down.
Sure.
It looked like he was about to just hand over the gun and help Mike.
Right.
But instead, again, it's that twist.
They kill him. They kill the Australian guy right then and there?
No, because that comes in play
at the end of
the 30.
That's right.
So then the girl, the new girl that's down in the basement, cuts the power.
That's what it was.
Zoe Deschanel?
Not that new girl.
Oh,
yeah. Sorry.
Who's that girl?
Marlo Thomas?
Oh. So she cuts the power, and then all hell breaks loose again.
Everyone starts running, and this is when they just, I think someone, it might be Barry, he says, shoot, just start shooting.
From this point on, it is a unrelenting...
chaos.
It is Wolf, like, this is Wolf Creek.
Okay.
Like, this is what Wolf Creek was like.
And again, it's like, once this started with the 30-minute countdown and the two heads exploding, like, it does not stop.
Right.
And it's not that long of a movie, so it's like, it really just, you know, people are dying quickly, people you thought would live, die, it doesn't matter. And then meanwhile, Sean Gunn's running around dumping out all the water containers because he thinks that there's like psychotropic.
He runs into one of the
mind control drugs.
Yeah. He picks up the whole jug and he's dumping it out. And the guy's like, did you drink any of that?
Yeah.
And the guy's like, what? Did you drink? He's like, you can thank me later. Yeah. And then they run away.
It's a funny bit of comic relief in the middle of all this seriousness because he goes to like two or three different water jugs.
Right.
And people are just like, what the hell are you doing?
What are you doing?
Yeah, you'll thank me later. And just walks off, you know?
So we get to the end of the 2 hours and they haven't killed enough.
So they killed 29 people.
Right.
And the again, another great moment comes down to when it's not the new girl, it's Mike's girlfriend.
Yeah.
She picks up like a paper cutter.
She breaks the paper cutter off like a machete.
And so the Australian guy is there and he was going to attack her and she ends up hitting him with it.
She hits him in the legs and she's going to kill him in,
or the hand or something. Something like that. And he's on the ground. He's like, no, don't do this. And she is about to, I thought, bring it down on his head. I thought it was going to be a head fake. Well, no pun intended, but
shot.
I thought it would be, you know, she was going to act like she wasn't and then was going to slice him in the head. But then all of a sudden, the intercom, she lets the blade down and the intercom comes off and it's like, you didn't kill 30 people, we're killing 60.
Right.
And at that moment, I'm just like, oh, that. And again, I get it and I think it is good writing, but it just makes you so mad because he's going to die anyway, right? So
yeah,
if she would have killed him and, you know, fought her moral compass there, it's like 30 more people could have survived. Now, for how long?
Who knows?
I mean, are you guys under the impression they would have ever let more than
I think one was gonna make it.
I mean,
and I don't even know if that one would get to live.
That's true.
I you know, come to find out, I mean, and again we'll get there, but it's like it was just delaying the inevitable, but still in that moment you're like, oh, if you
damn it,
because as soon as that goes off, people's heads start exploding.
Oh, yeah.
His head explodes.
Yep.
So she could have killed him and saved 30, or he dies anyway, right?
Yeah.
But there's this great scene in the lunchroom. So it goes back to Sean Gunn, and he's sitting up on a counter, and there's people ducking. As soon as the heads start exploding, people like, hear them, but they start ducking under different lunch tables. And he jumps down from the counter, and he's like, this is all in my head. And he starts slowly walking through the lunchroom, and like landmines, heads are exploding all around him.
Yep.
And he's just walking. He's like, this is in my head. This isn't real. And it's just a really cool looking scene,
right?
And the way it moves and everything. And
it was all in his head.
It was.
True.
That is true.
Yep. And it soon comes out.
Boop. So we start losing characters where I was like, so there's nobody that's going to make it out of here.
Well, because think about it, we had 80 and then at least 30 are killed.
Right. So now we're down to.
But like, then 6 and 30 more get killed. So it's like we're down to under 20.
Right. Yeah, our characters have now, like, nobody knows who's alive and who's not.
Yeah.
So, like...
Well, they make an announcement now that it's, like, whoever has the most kills wins. And I thought that there was a, like, I would have done it slightly differently in that because the CEO, because he had systematically shot all those people, had such a lead, it was highly improbable
kill him.
That, you know... So, I think they should have also done it to where...
But if he dies, then...
Okay, hang on. What I thought they should have done is if you kill somebody, you get their kills.
Oh, like you're like a Highlander.
Yeah. And so
then there could only be one.
There's only going to be one. But, like, but then you get their kill, so it also incentivizes you. Like, because if you're somebody who's got zero kills, it's like, well, you're not going to win.
I'm not going to make it.
But to be fair, though, but if you have zero kills and you kill everyone, then you still have the most kills.
Okay, but if you have zero kills, what are the odds of you being able to kill everyone?
Also true.
Yeah, I could see that the stronger would have more kills, sure.
Yeah, that's why I thought that it would give people an incentive to go out and fight harder, because it's like if you have zero kills, you might as well just put a bullet in your head. Like you're not gonna get out. Like, so you should go. And it also gives people, at least in the short term, I know that they're trying to wrap up the movie, but in the short term, to form alliances and like, let's the two of us go after this guy.
But and I get it, and that logic is good, but that would have made this movie a 2-hour movie. And so what I do like is how tight it is. I mean, it's like, their heads explode, kill 30, nope, they kill 60, and then we're down to the last, and then eventually it's over shortly, you know. So it is peppy. So two predictions I had here. So at this point, I thought, which may have been a little bit cliche, but I thought someone would kill themselves and be the 30th person.
Yeah.
So I thought they were going to save, because I didn't expect 60 to go that quickly.
Yeah.
So I thought that after 29, someone would end up shooting themselves or killing themselves, and that would save them, and then maybe there'd be a technicality, whatever. So that didn't happen. And the other thing that I thought would happen is, at this point, I'm like, the new girl is going to be the last one to live. Because I thought, well, she's killed that one, and if everyone else dies, and she kills the last person, I thought she was going to walk out on her first day.
She was going to be like, hiding, people have forgotten about her.
Forgot about it.
It gets down to one, and then she pops up, and it's like, blam.
I thought it would be kind of neat that, like, again, we are that character. It's our first day at Boco. She shows up, and then all this crazy stuff happens, and she ends up walking out, just like we leave the theater. I thought it would be an interesting twist, but...
I thought it was going to... It was going to be... Because, you know, it's supposed to be a psychological experiment.
Yeah.
And psychological experiments are notorious... especially the unethical ones, but even the ethical ones, for lying about what their true purpose is.
Sure.
You know, because they don't want you to try and figure it out, so they'll tell you one thing when they're really looking for something else. And I thought it was going to be, when it got down to the end, it was going to be that they had lied, and it was ever who had killed the least. Like, they were trying to find the best person,
okay,
not the worst person.
Yeah.
And so it was going to end up that... This guy,
the COO, would be the last of the two, but he's the bad guy, so he'd end up
That it's gonna
interesting
be, that they would actually save that he would be the winner, the Mike guy.
You know what I think is really a testament to this script and the whole premise of this is the fact that we have so many ideas that all sound like pretty good ideas, like we're coming up with how many ways they could have gone, is just a testament of how good the rest of it and the final product is, because we're coming up with all these things that could happen, and there's not really a wrong answer. I mean, I think all these are good, you know. Yeah. So I just it's a very intriguing concept, this whole experiment and how people would act. That girl, the new girl, there's some elevator deaths, you know. Yeah. One guy gets his body broken into because at the top of the elevator.
That got a great reaction in the theater.
Ouch. Yeah. I mean, it's slow that and one stops stinks. The elevator. Eventually the COO, Barry, that's on there going up to the top, he gets out, but the girl is kind of like hanging in the elevator shaft. She swings her way to the other side.
She American Ninja Warriors her way like across.
And she goes into the next elevator, and then again, I thought she was going to live. She goes downstairs, the elevator opens up.
And there's
she's shot
right in the head, and I was like, whoa,
right,
well, not what
it was cool, because again, you didn't expect it.
No, hell no.
So yeah, she's gone, and then this really has come down to, I mean, we should say, like, Sean Gunn and the guy he's with are in the kitchen, and they get into a fight, and
do they get into
not
a fight?
Together, but like, they're one of the guys is shooting at them. I think it's the big bearded guy.
Oh,
maybe?
Yeah, probably.
But they end up flipping over a table.
Right,
and
right,
they're
right,
shooting through the table. And I think Sean gets popped through the head.
Yeah, yeah. They both get killed, like, when it's...
Through the table, like, through the head. Yeah. And so he's gone. We're really down to to Mike.
Mike, the girlfriend.
Barry.
Barry.
Do we say John McGinley?
McGinley is still around.
Yeah, how does
but he... So he's dragging, like...
Oh, at this point, he's, like, one of the top ones. He has 7 kills, I think, and Barry has 11 kills.
Right, right.
How did he
end up? He's dragging one of the guys, like, through... He's, like, dragging him and hitting and chopping him up. And then, the girl is right there.
So I mean, this is destined. Like, she had to kill him, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, one of the first scenes of the movie is him creeping on her. And so you're like, when the goes down, she's got to take him out, right?
You got to go.
So he's standing there, and he's basically just like, you're not going to do it, or don't do it, or something like that. Trying to talk her out of it.
She stomps his face in. Does she stomp his face in, or does she cut his... like?
This is the one where did she take the axe and start? Who's
she
the one
does
that crushes
take
the
axe?
Face?
Yeah, this is it. She takes the axe and just destroys John McGinley's face.
Yeah, she had some built up aggression.
Yeah, a little bit
from all the years of creeper messaging.
So that takes him off the board.
Yeah, like, so his score is gone.
Right. So then we go back down. Like, somehow we get back to all of our characters kind of hook back up.
Well, she is downstairs, and this is actually before Sean Gunn had died. But because they run into each other and they go to the control room where the microphone is, or like the security
desk.
Oh,
that's right. That's right.
And she calls for Mike. Mike is wounded and he's kind of off by himself right now. And she says, you know, Mike, if you're still around, come meet me on the first floor. I'm here. Because she basically just wants to see him again. I mean, they're all doomed.
They're
going to
die,
know? So she calls him down, and then that's later. And then Sean Gunn dies, and I think John McGinley dies. And that's where that goes down. She's downstairs, and there's also a guy throwing Molotov cocktails.
So this is the HR guy.
Yeah,
who is
awesome.
Who's just, like, launching Molotov cocktails.
And where did they get the ingredients for that? You need, like, gas or something?
No.
Oh, no, he had a gas
alcohol.
Can. What's that? He had a gas can.
Oh, he filled the bottles with gasoline.
Oh, where did he get a gas can?
From the maintenance guys.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he went. He did fill them up, yeah. So, but...
Because when they're going through the tallies... Like, he's already started to turn.
Thing is, like, the HR guy was a good guy and he's on Mike's team, but, you know, he's got kids, and he realizes when the announcement comes on, and I don't think we mentioned this, but when they give the tallies, they say one of you is going to walk out. And so that's where it comes into play. Whoever has the most kills will be the one that we let go.
Right.
So he turns and there's this girl that his coworker that obviously he was close with, and he's like, I'm sorry, and just shoots him in the head. And he starts mowing down people down there in the room, and that's when he gets the Molotov cocktails together. So he's downstairs launching these things, and so Barry's down there, and the girl and Mike meet up down trying to get past, and he's throwing these things. And did McGinley take him out? I know
McGinley's
we're
already dead.
Okay, who's the guy that took the
I think it was probably the boss.
Maybe it was Barry. Yeah. So he gets taken out, and so now it's down to the girl and Mike and
well, and then
Barry.
So they're in they're getting away from Barry, and then they duck into this storage closet, and they are talking, and it turns out
Theater 20 at Ronnie's.
That's what it was. It turns
very
out
mad
that
at, like, I'm in this room.
Oh man, that would be scary.
The girl has been shot.
Yeah,
and
so
she's not gonna make it.
Yeah, Barry's chasing them and shooting at them, and you don't realize it until they slow down.
So
they
have like the little moment where she's like, I love you too, and this is where she dies.
Oh.
And then there's a standoff between Barry and Mike.
And then there were two.
And then
I like it. So they go into a conference room, and I think Mike is like hiding under a desk, and Barry walks in there, and a presentation starts going on about the Belko experiment.
Yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
there's one thing on the wall. It was either like right before this or in this room where like about bringing humans closer together.
Something like that.
And then the projection comes on and they're talking about how Boco is this great company and bringing these people together. And, you know, they go over their elevator pitch or their spiel. And of course it's so counterintuitive.
Of course.
It's just funny little humor there. And they start fighting. And I thought, man, Barry's got the hand-to-hand combat training, the military. So it's like, how is Mike going to get out of this? But they struggle. And Mike eventually gets a big heavy, one of those big staplers, I think is what it is. Heavy staplers.
Yeah, and he's just like bashing his head in with the stapler. Yeah. And then so Mike ends up walking back through everything.
I thought it was a tape dispenser.
It was a tape dispenser.
I know it was like a weighted.
Yeah.
So like one of those big tape dispensers that has like sand in the bottom. Right. A really heavy, huge one.
So Mike walks back out and he like everything opens up and he immediately walks over to
the shed.
The shed.
Yeah. The shutters go down
I forgot when did you guys mention that they're picking the bombs out of their heads?
No, I didn't.
Okay, so Gunn and the big guy are like cutting out the tracking devices from these people who have already died.
I kind of had a problem with this because whenever they did something that was kind of creative, the experiment would shut them down. When he tried to cut out his own device, they were watching them and they shut him down. When they tried to hang the banner to get outside help, but when they were going around cutting out all the bombs, I really thought that the experiment would have stopped them from doing it.
Unless they
never predicted that people would cut and like, you know, they didn't
feel like they
that wasn't
for
even
everything.
That's a good point. It's just such an obscure, weird thing that to cut people's heads open.
Right.
Like, I don't know that even the experiment would have thought of that. But
at the same time, when you get to the end, you see how many they're conducting.
Yeah,
that's true. That's a good point.
Yeah,
and they should have thought of every So
Mike takes them.
He's got them in his hand. And he's going out and he goes across to the shed.
Well, they're in his pocket. So the guy, the two guards have dragged him to the shed.
Right. So he's got, you know, he has this, and finally it reveals like the face. Of this experiment.
The Oracle from the third Matrix movie.
He's in the second.
So, it's kind of funny when you think of like all the screens.
Right.
And just the way,
it was done better in this movie.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. he kind of tells him exactly what this was. And then Mike is looking at the switchboard. And he was just like, look, I don't know what you think you're going to do. And he was like, you know, those bombs? Like, I put them on all of you.
And so it flashes back, but, like, if you think about it, they do show him, being grabbed by the two guards that bring him to the shed. He does kind of launch himself onto the Oracle, the guy running the experiment, whatever his name is. And, he kind of hits him, like, kind of grabs him, like, you know, what are you doing?
Right.
But he was planting those bombs.
Yeah, he lunges again for the switchboard, and he just switches all of the switches except for himself.
Yeah.
And blows everybody up.
Yeah. Which I thought was satisfying.
Oh yeah, I like that.
Yeah, because when we got to the end, so like there's two ways I would end this movie if it were up to me. I would either have him walk out and just go back to life and that's it, cut to black and like what the hell does he do now? Or have him take out at least a leg of this experiment. You know what I mean?
So my ending is he dies. Like he gets shot
because
you can't have anybody get away from this thing.
Well, eventually.
Well, we think we can't get anybody.
I agree because I'm like, are they really going to let someone walk? So I thought, are we really going to go to an explanation and then have it be an unsatisfying explanation?
Right. Yeah.
So I was worried when we got here and the guy was talking to him that they were going to explain this whole thing, which like sometimes it's left to the imagination what was going on. They explain the thing and I'm like, and then they're just gonna let him go and that's the end. So the fact that he had him kill all those guys I did not see coming,
right?
And it was so much more satisfying.
Oh yeah.
And apparently there were two versions, two endings that James Gunn wrote for this, and I don't know what the other one was supposed to be, so I am curious, but I wonder if there was a less satisfying conclusion. They decided to
interesting
do this one.
Yeah, so then like Mike walks out of the shed and he kind of looks up in the air and the camera pans out Truman Show style and it pans out even bigger and you've got all of these screens
and then more
and then like the voice comes back over and he's like, that is the end of phase one, now beginning phase
and
two.
There are, it zooms out into thousands of these experiments, so, and they're all over the country, there are different languages on all the buildings
right
and Belco logos, and so you realize that there are going to be sequels.
Maybe.
But,
maybe.
I mean, that's, you know,
that's
that was,
the goal.
That yeah, was, yeah. Right.
But
that's
always the goal.
It's always the goal.
But well, I mean,
unless you're making Schindler's List.
That's true. You don't really want a sequel to
that's
that.
That's not the goal.
But, yeah, so you realize that, like, they were just one drop in the bucket. They were one experiment in this country, you know, ran by this organization. So he took out a couple guys on this leg, but, I mean, that's nothing. So, so
well, I think everybody took out a couple guys. Like, I think that's how you became the last one, is you... You took
I don't think
out.
Everybody took out the people that were running it,
I don't
though.
Think so.
Oh,
yeah.
I did think that.
I didn't
no.
think it that way.
Oh. I think they were showing all the people with guns and stuff just winning their experiment.
Yeah, gotcha. And like one guy would like look like he had won and he kills himself.
Yeah.
And,
yeah, they expect one person to win, and I honestly think they were going to
let
Mike
Lou.
Another
guy ended up on Ellen? I thought that was weird.
What?
He was jumping up and down on the couch.
Yeah, that's Oprah.
He was
it was Oprah.
Oh, dang it.
I was in PetSmart the other day.
Yeah.
We had to buy crickets for the gecko that my stepdaughter has.
Okay.
We have to go constantly make runs to buy crickets.
Lovely.
Okay. Like,
great.
I had boys. I thought I would avoid stuff like this.
Nope.
I get a girl, and we have lizards.
I think you got to, like, freeze them. Just get a whole bunch and freeze them.
I don't know. So, anyway, I just thought
nope.
it was... thought it was weird. So there's a display where, like, Ellen has her own line of some sort of dog thing. I don't know what it was. I don't remember if it was like dog clothes or dog food or I don't know, but it's a picture of her and her dog, and she has a Dachshund, and I just couldn't get past the irony that Ellen has a wiener dog. Do with that what you will. I just
enlightening as always, Tom.
Counterintuitive.
Yeah, that's funny.
That's all.
That's good stuff.
Anyway, back to the movie.
Yeah. So it ends. I guess is where it ends. Like, it cuts off.
So he makes it for now.
For now.
I wonder if
now he runs the.
That's. I mean. I don't know.
What do you even like mentally? What do you even do?
You go into a bigger Hunger Games.
Yeah.
That's what you do.
So what I was wondering. So now, I mean, just. Speculating here, is phase two all
you
the
take,
winners go and they somehow compete, or
it's like a tournament, like March Madness, it's like a tournament.
Yeah,
so
I just didn't know if like phase two was a different type of experiment or if it was the same winners going to another.
It's probably
a
different experiment, but it's all the winners.
Yeah, that's interesting.
I thought it was going to be that the entire thing was secretly run by Phil Silvers.
What?
Wait, no, that's the Bilko experiment.
Oh.
That's
bad.
Old timey reference.
That's we're not.
We haven't had an old timey reference
in a while. That's true. That's fair.
Dan was here.
He'd get the.
Dan would get that joke and love it.
You know what? I almost felt young for a second, and then you just brought it back.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's how it ends. And, this is obviously it's going to get swallowed up by the next few weeks. But do yourself a favor. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was fun.
I think it was a really fun down and dirty horror movie.
Yeah.
Like, what else do you expect? It was clever. It was smart for what it was like for what it was.
I think it has the disadvantage of being released in the wake of Get Out.
Yeah.
I think, for sure. Get Out, this is a smart movie, but Get Out was a brilliant movie.
Sure. Yep.
And they're both kind of playing in the same genres. And,
oh, absolutely.
And so,
yeah. Both Blumhouse.
And so I think like I wish I could have seen this movie before Get Out.
Yeah,
like
that makes sense.
I think this movie and I liked this movie a lot. I had
this
a lot of fun at it.
But
I think
it's dumb fun than Get Out being satire.
Yeah.
Social commentary.
Social commentary.
Yeah.
This does have that, but it's more of the fun. Like when I think of Kong Skull Island, I'm not looking for Oscar winning screenplay. I'm looking for King Kong punching lizards in the face. Whereas this movie was a down and dirty Hunger Games, but for adults and office humor. It's not trying to be Get Out. And,
right.
And that's
it didn't try and fail. Like, I don't that.
But,
I just mean that, like,
comparatively when they're released at the same time.
Yeah.
It did do it a disservice.
Yeah. It's
kind of
like
this one.
Dr. Strangelove and Failsafe.
Right.
That problem.
That's interesting. Like
Godfather 3 and Goodfellas. Like Godfather 3, they came out in the same year.
Oh.
And so they, like, I think Godfather 3 had the disservice of being not one of the best movies of all time.
Yeah.
Like 1 and 2 were.
Sure.
But then also, it came out around the same time as Goodfellas, so here's another gangster movie.
Right.
That's kind of like, no, this is how we make gangster movies now.
What a weird...
You know what, though?
Is.
Like, so that's your memory, because you're older than us, though, but like, I found Goodfellas and Godfather 3 at completely different times and way after theatrical release. I think Godfather 3 is terrible.
When you get to the incest, like I said on that post, when you get to the incest angle and you're just like, what?
I just hate that
what
movie.
Are you, what
like,
is happening
so I'm not
in this
comparing
movie?
The two or right. like going to one or the other as a theater goer. I just think three is so bad.
Well, I think it back. What year was that? 80?
90.
90?
Yeah.
So, I mean, you don't have the internet. So you're just like, oh, man, Godfather 3 or Goodfellas? Like, those are, you don't know what Godfather 3 is until you see it.
Yeah.
You're just like, wait, it's Sonny's bastard child and he's trying to hook up with Michael's daughter?
Well, you know what? I always make this comparison that Rocky 5 is Godfather 3. It's like
no,
the same.
I'll watch Godfather 3 before I watch Rocky 5.
But they're the same angle. It's like, it's not about the people you want. It's the new guy coming in trying to take over. Like, it's the same story, you know?
I see.
And so I think it's the Rocky 5 of that franchise,
yeah,
you know?
Okay. But yeah, as somebody who was alive then, Goodfellas opened in September. Godfather 3 opened in December.
Oh, well, good Lord.
And so to have just seen Goodfellas and then go to see Godfather 3, you were just like, oh.
Yeah.
You know, this is what they're doing.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's why they say timing is everything, right?
Well, even back then, apparently, yeah. Yeah. Like, yeah. But yeah, that's it. This was a lot of fun. I had a good time at it.
Like I said, it's once it starts up, it never lets down. And I thoroughly, from beginning to end, just enjoyed it. It's like, check your mind. And again, it is smarter than your average. Just it's not just a torture porn or anything like that.
Yeah, totally.
But still, like, just have fun with it. You're not trying to make that social statement in the same way that Get Out was, but you just enjoy it. It's got the humor.
It is. If you liked Cabin in the Woods by Drew Goddard and Joss Whedon, I think this will be right up your alley.
Yeah.
And Cabin in the Woods was great. I loved that movie.
And Tom, you're not a horror guy, so, and you enjoyed it.
No, I'm not a horror guy, and I did enjoy
so,
it.
Like, yeah. I think this
did
has a
Cabin
broader reach.
What's that? Did you see Cabin in the Woods?
Yes, I thought that
oh,
was
man.
Amazing.
Yeah. Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah.
I loved Cabin
I didn't
in the Woods.
I didn't know where that was going to go.
Yeah.
No, I loved right. Cabin in the Woods.
Yeah. I thought that was brilliant.
But you're right. Like, that would be a great two-pack, you know, or a double feature.
Well, if you want to add a third, we can segue into a video recovery. I can pick one up.
Did Dan send something up
he
from
did
the
not,
salt mines?
But I have one that I think right. fits in, but it's kind of a sci-fi version
okay.
of what we just witnessed. And it came out in, oh man, when did it come out? Let me cheat and look.
Event Horizon.
I think it came out in 1973.
1997.
Oh, I was a little off.
Yeah. But it's called Cube.
Oh my
oh,
god.
Oh yeah, Cube.
Yeah. This movie in a lot of ways reminded me of Cube. Obviously, this movie has a much larger cast so you can get more
yeah,
killings
right.
because Cube is more about messing with your head, where this is more about it plays
messing
up more
your,
of the violence.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
messing
all,
with their heads.
We've yeah. all we've all three seen a video recovery.
Yeah.
You know, Jay will pick something obscure
yeah.
and we're like, what?
What are you talking about?
Maybe Tom will know because he's older, but like yeah. me and Joe are like,
he's like, this is only available in parts on Vimeo.
Cube's great. That's when they're like crawling through all these weird like vents into different cubes and they're trying to kill them.
Yeah, like these people just
oh,
wake
yeah.
up in this giant cube and
love
like
it.
Every like what 20 minutes or so
yeah,
it switches.
It rearranges. Yeah.
And like there's all these different people that have these different skill sets that have to work together. And then if
is this the D'Onofrio one?
No, it's the Cell.
That yeah. That,
okay. That, I don't think there's anybody that's a name in this movie. But
the Cell's directed the guy that did the Cell did The Fall and he did he didn't do that Jennifer Lopez movie, did he?
I kept thinking as Jennifer Lopez.
The Boy Next Door?
I think so.
I think he
because
did.
I think Jennifer Lopez.
What's his name? He has like one name. Tarzan?
Tarzan?
The Cell. Who's the guy that did The Cell? I'm sorry. I know we're tangenting as we tend to do, but.
McGee.
Oh.
No.
What
no.
a fucking
chair. That is.
Chair.
Liberace.
Keep going, you might get it here.
Jesus.
Okay, he has two names, but he goes by Tarsum.
Okay,
his first name's Tarsum. So
we did an episode on one of this guy's movies.
So,
so your one name guy has two names.
Yeah.
Well, but they usually just go.
I find
like,
a flaw.
Kevin. I think that he doesn't like. He's not listed on IMDb as this, but in his movies,
he goes
like
by one name. You know, Quentin Tarantino.
you know,
Ridley Scott.
When he directs a movie, not on his IMDb, I'm pretty sure it says directed by Tarsum. Like he goes by one name in the movies, but he's listed like
Martin Scorsese.
shut the hell up. Go watch his movies. Directed by Tarsum.
No, don't go watch The Boy Next Door.
Well, yeah, don't watch that. But Cube.
But Cube is a lot of fun. Have you guys ever seen the other ones? I have not.
They've
had two
more.
There's three of them.
From what I understand, two's really bad, and three's kind of a return to form.
Oh, really?
Kind of like Phantasm.
Sure, if you say so.
I think after I saw the original Cube on VHS, of course, you know, this is back in the era of VHS, but I think I went and sought out the other two, and I just can't even remember them. I remember one being so good. Cube, I think they do something with a 3 because it's a
cube. Of course
cube.
They do.
Yeah.
The E is a 3 or whatever.
Yeah.
Well, then it's not cubed. The 3 would need to be
that's
up
true.
In the corner.
That's a good point.
It doesn't make any sense.
Good call. Yeah. Good pull with Cube.
Well, thank you. Yeah. But I saw on their Wikipedia page that they are currently, Lionsgate is trying to do a remake.
You know, it's funny. I was just going back to that Sounds of the Lambs thing. Mm-hmm. I feel like that is prime... Not for us, because I think it would be awful, but like the last installment would be
entirely on Rascals.
Yeah, the whole thing.
And Segways.
But it's Will Graham and Clarice.
Oh, wait, I was thinking of Fast and Furious.
Oh, yeah, right. No, it'd be Will Graham and Clarice teaming up to go after Lecter. And that would be... Does he make it out of Hannibal?
I think so.
He gets away.
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah, he
so
cuts
like
his head
what's
open.
What's the last movie?
Hannibal.
So the Hannibal is like chronologically the
Hannibal is chronologically like well no that the way that chronologically the way they made them is
no, I'm I think sorry, I'm sorry, I
chronologically
mean,
from a storytelling
Hannibal's
the
last
Hannibal's
one.
Hannibal's the last one.
Yeah.
Okay. And Red Dragon's a prequel to Silence of the Lambs.
Red Dragon is how he gets is yes.
Okay. I always feel whenever I saw Hannibal in the video store, I always felt bad for like that one lonely Mark Twain fan. Who's like,
I love Hannibal.
Oh, I want to rent Hannibal.
Wait a minute. Why is he in Ray Liotta's brain?
This is going to be great.
But yeah, like I feel
what
like
delight.
Whoever owns the rights to that in this era of reboots and sequels is we're going to get a Clarice and Will Graham team up movie. Avengers style with a new Jack Craw. Was it? What's that guy's name?
New Jack City.
Not New Jack City. Who was the who's the boss?
Tony Danza?
Tony Danza. But the guy, Jack...
Judith Light?
No. Oh, Judith Light. Alyssa Milano?
She was not the boss.
She could have been the boss.
Ally McBeal?
She could be my boss. No, Jack Crawford. The guy who is never the same actor in anything. Like, the guy that played... Like, the character Jack Crawford is Clarice's boss, right? So, in Silence of the Lambs, it's Scott Glenn. In Red Dragon,
he's
it's...
Like,
Howard Cosell.
He's like Rusty Griswold.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And then in Hannibal, the TV show, it's Lawrence Fishburne. And I don't even think he's in the movie Hannibal. Like, the character's not even in the movie.
That's Larry Fishburne. Thank
sorry,
you.
Larry
Cowboy,
Fishburne,
or Cowboy Curtis. You can.
So,
wasn't... Go ahead. Sorry. I mean, I would like to do one more tangent real quick.
Oh, please. Please.
Isn't the kid, it was in the original Vacation, was the guy from Big Bang Theory, John Galecki?
No, he was in Christmas Vacation. The original,
kid was
Anthony Michael
Anthony
Hall.
Yeah. I knew there was.
And then I'm almost positive it's Ethan Embry
and Juliette Lewis is the daughter in Christmas Vacation. Okay.
Right.
So like some big names came out of. I mean, people that have done well came out of.
Yeah.
Chevy Chase.
Well, no.
Beverly D'Angelo.
No. As
Don Ameche.
As Rusty.
Oh yeah. Yeah, I think Ethan Embry was the.
Really.
Oh, and Russ and freaking. Andy from The Office.
Well, that's in the...
He's still Rusty.
Oh, yeah.
He's Rusty in the new one.
We were thinking, like, kids that grew up to be successful.
Yeah. So anyway, that's it for this episode. I guess let's go around the table and everybody can say where to find them.
This is Joe. You can follow me on the Twitter at JoeyButts, BUTTS21.
This is Kevin. Follow me on Twitter at KevinRBrackett and read the reviews and interviews at ReviewSTL.com.
And this is Tom. You can follow me on Twitter at RogerKubert or on Facebook at Facebook.com/TomO'Keefe. Don't forget, if you would like to continue the conversation online, we will be there waiting for you at facebook.com/realspoilers or on Twitter at realspoilers or just on the good old fashioned internet, realspoilers.com or dirtypiratehookers.com. Either one gets you there.
There you go.
But one's more fun to type, but you'll have to explain.
And to trick people with your browser history because they see it and you're like, wait, go to it.
You got that wife that likes to snoop and she's like, Dirty Pirate Hookers. I caught you.
That's how you get them.
Oh, it's those delightful rapscallions at Real Spoilers.
I love it when people's wives call us delightful rapscallions.
Why was I ever upset or doubting you?
Right.
So I just won't check these next 10 links because obviously there'll be movie
podcasts. I'm sure this analentry19.org is probably just another link to realspoilers.com.
I like how to get a .org domain name, you have to be a not-for-profit organization and prove it. And so for some reason, they have a .org. So they're a not-profit organization.
Well, they're just trying to spread the word about anal entry.
Yeah, they just want everybody to know.
19 times. Well, the first 18 times, they made a profit. They had to give up. And they couldn't get the .org. Maybe they thought it was .orgy.
That's what they thought it was. Yeah. Like, this makes sense.
Yeah, I always thought when they were like, we need a .xxx, and I was like, well, I thought that's what the .orgy was for. Yeah. Is that, I'm confused.
This no, must be the best. What happens?
Yeah. This must be the best shameless plugs at the end of a show. Yeah.
Shameless butt plugs.
Oh.
Hey. It only took me 265 episodes to make that joke.
Yeah, we'll get there.
I think that's restraint.
I think that's probably
like
true.
I hadn't thought it. Yeah, right. Just waiting for the right time.
Because you're all plugged up.
Yeah. So anyway, that's it for this episode. Coming up on our next episode, we will get to Beauty and the Beast. Not to be confused with Beauty and the Beat, the Go-Go's biopic.
That's not a thing.
No, it's not a
okay.
thing. But their record was called Beauty and the
Yes,
Beast.
It was, yes.
So, there you go. So anyway, so that's it for this episode. Thanks for tuning in. And until next time, Gizmo kills Mohawk with a Molotov cocktail of Whiteout. Oh, and hang on, before we bail too quickly, let's not forget that Kevin actually sat down with the stars of the film, Michael Rooker, or if you're Joe, Michael Rocker. How did you say it?
I said Roker.
Rooker.
That's Al Roker. Yeah. That's
oh, yeah,
exactly
Al
where you're
sorry. Yeah,
yes.
Right.
So
it's a completely different interview.
So Joe thinks that Kevin sat down with Michelle Rooker, star of the movie.
Wait, you didn't do that?
What?
Is that a thing?
No.
Not this time.
Kevin sat down with the stars of the film, Michael Rooker and Sean Gunn, and he has some nice conversations for you to listen to.
Thanks for taking the time to talk today.
Oh, of course.
Talking about Wizard World, which is coming up in April here in St. Louis, this is your first time at the St. Louis convention, correct?
Yes, it is.
Do you get back home often, and how does it feel to be coming to St. Louis for the convention?
I'm really happy to be going home to St. Louis. I kind of had this on my radar that I really wanted to go. I thought of trying to get in last year, but I knew, well, I was working in Atlanta anyway, but I knew that this year would be pretty shortly before Guardians 2 came out in May, which would be pretty good timing. I don't get home as much as I'd like because my parents come out to Los Angeles so often because they have several kids and grandkids there. So I don't always get to go back too much. I try to get down to their lake house at the Lake of the Ozarks, you know, about once a year if I can. But just going and spending time in St. Louis is something I haven't been able to do as much of as I like. I'd say every few years I get back.
We, of course, love to hear success stories coming out of St. Louis, and your family obviously has a lot of success. So we're always really happy to hear that and put St. Louis on the map with people in the industry. It's great. Talking about...
thank you.
Of course. Talking about Guardians of the Galaxy, obviously the first movie was huge. It's in the top five highest grossing Marvel films. It was a huge worldwide phenomenon in 2014. You just wrapped production last year on the second one, and the movie's coming out in May. How did it feel to get back together with the crew? You guys seem like one big family.
It was phenomenal. It was the best creative experience I've had in my whole career. I think there was a part of me that was a tiny bit worried about how success might have changed some of the people who were involved in the first movie. And if anything, I think people were so proud of the work that we did that they were that much more focused and more driven to make the second movie even better. I didn't see anybody phoning it in or resting on the success of the first movie at all, not once. And that's really gratifying. As you said, that team of creative people has really become a family. You know, I think that the Guardians, Chris and Dave and Zoe and now Palm, and certainly Michael Rooker and Karen Gillan and so on. Some new faces there now, like Chris Sullivan and Elizabeth Debicki. But I think they're all just really great people and people who are really driven to make a great movie. There's not any egos in there, and I think that's a pretty special thing.
So you wear multiple hats in the film. You know, you of course play a character, but then you also play the stand-in for Rocket, and you're wearing the green suit and everything. How are the stresses of playing Rocket compared to just acting as a live-action character?
I have to point out, it's not exactly a stand-in. I play... Yeah, Rocket does have a stand-in. He's a stuffed animal.
I know. Sorry, bad terminology.
That's okay. What I do is I play Rocket on set, then I do the motion reference for the VFX team, and it's a really interesting job. It's something that on the first movie we sort of figured out as we went along what the best process would be for making Rocket as realistic as possible. And one thing you need when you have a character that's totally CGI like that, I think it's really important to have an actor there on set so that the other actors have someone to work with, so they're not looking at a blank space, so that they're not just, you know, hearing lines and all imagining different things. They all are seeing one thing. They're seeing me and my face where Rocket's face is. So from my point of view as an actor, it's kind of just like any other role. I prepare to play Rocket for the time that I'm on set. But then after the movie's shot, something different then happens, and the work that I did provides a sort of rough draft for the animators and for the editors when they're putting together the movie. And then, of course, Bradley Cooper comes in and does his voice and really breathes life into the whole thing. So it's an unusual job. It can be very physically demanding at times because I'm down on the ground a lot. But it's fun work. I'm doing it now, too. That's what I'm spending a lot of time this year doing for Avengers.
Fantastic. So, yeah. That's exciting. Yeah, I saw that. Yeah. You're also going to be in Avengers. So that must be huge. And, I mean, that movie is unbelievable as far as the budget behind it, the amount of stars involved. I know that Guardians is obviously a huge film, but is Avengers kind of the next level? Is it even crazier?
Well, I think it's probably only next level in terms of all the different schedules that they're trying to juggle. Yeah. With all these celebrities that are in the movie. You know, as far as just being a big... I can't imagine ever being in a bigger movie than these Avengers movies. You know, looking at the board, looking at all the actors that are in this movie, it just goes on and on and on and on. It's one massive name after the next. So I'm very grateful to be a part of it. It's been fun so far.
Now, going back to Guardians real quick. So, you know, you're, of course, working with family on that film, and you and James have long careers. You've done a lot of movies. You've done TV, all that. Do you find it more difficult to work with family, or is it a better experience, a mix of both? How does that...
You know, I love working with my brother. We've worked together in one capacity or another for many years, and he's great at his job. And so I don't really think of him so much as my brother. Yes, we have a history that's different than the other actors in the movie, but for the most part, I think we have a tremendous amount of trust in one another for the different jobs that we're doing. He's a great director. I feel like I give him what he wants from an acting perspective. He can communicate with me super easily because we've been doing it our whole lives. And so if anything, it's easier to work with him than anyone else that there is for me. And I certainly will hopefully work with him, you know, continually for forever, you know, until, you know, for the rest of our careers. I hope that we continue to work together as much as possible.
Speaking of working together, so you've got another movie coming out, The Belko Experiment. I think James said this came to him in a dream. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. That's what he told me. And then he had it just... It came to him in a dream, and he wrote it, and I think he had the script tucked away for a little while. He just sort of put it aside and didn't think about it, but when he had a little window to produce something in between the two Guardians movies, things came together so that we were actually able to go... We were down in Bogota, Colombia for 6 weeks. It was another just really awesome experience. Obviously, it's a much smaller movie, but the cast of actors in it is just... outstanding. It's just this great list of a lot of great theater actors and people who have just been around for forever, really people who really care about the craft. And that was really fun, and a fun group of people too. We were kind of, you know, we're making this really intense movie with a lot of blood and a lot of killing and just having a ball. When we weren't shooting, we were all hanging out together in Colombia. It was a lot of fun.
I love seeing these movies in the genre that are original, and I'm sure it seems like you and your brother are huge fans of the genre, and so I'm sure this is great to be a part of something like this.
Yeah, absolutely. So I can't wait for an audience to see it. Yeah.
So speaking of co-stars, Michael Rooker is going to be at St. Louis Wizard World as well, and it looks like you guys have a lot of fun, not only on set, but I saw the Facebook Live video of you at the Stan Lee roast, and you were kind of going undercover, taping some of that.
Yeah. Rooker's always a handful. He and I have now gosh, how many movies have we done together now? At least four. And we've been friends a long time, but Rooker can be a little bit like a wild animal sometimes. He's a little hard to corral.
Did you get into any trouble on the Guardians 2 set?
I don't ever get into trouble. I'm good, but he gets into trouble all the time. He's pulling his pants down at inopportune moments and things like that. He's always causing trouble, Rooker.
Him and Jason Mewes did a panel at a Wizard World last year in St. Louis. It was absolutely hilarious. He's such a great entertainer. And do you guys have anything planned yet about talking on stage?
We do every convention that we do together. We generally tend to do one. So, and particularly since I know Guardians will be coming out just around the corner from the convention, I'm sure we'll do a panel. There's something else I wanted to mention, too, if you don't mind.
Absolutely.
One of the reasons, in addition to going back to my hometown and being able to do a convention there, another bonus for me was I'm active in animal rescue. And on Saturday night, the 8th, in St. Louis, I'm hosting a fundraising party for Tent Life Cat Rescue in downtown St. Louis. So we're going to be throwing a party at the Luminary on the 8th, and hoping to get some people down there. There's going to be a lot of fun events and pizza and booze and dancing, and it's going to be a lot of fun, and hopefully raise some money for some homeless animals.
I always see videos of you guys with pictures of different animals, and I know you're big into animals. Is that something that you and your family have been doing pretty much your whole lives?
I think we've always liked animals. James and I, in particular, I think really love animals and try to get involved where we can. I don't know where that particular desire came from, but I know that I've always, particularly as an adult, I felt that I have an affinity towards cats, and I understand them very well. And I think it's always a shame how many homeless cats are put down and are living on the streets. And so any little help that we can give is always is important to me.
That's awesome. Well, you're gathering quite the fan following. You've got not only the Marvel stuff, you've got the Gilmore Girls stuff. It must be neat to be in all these different subsets of these fans.
Yeah, it really is. It's in a lot of ways, it comes down to great storytelling and great writing first, I think, always. So the fact that I've been able to work with creators like my brother on Guardians and Amy Sherman Palladino on Gilmore Girls, they're such great writers and such great storytellers that's what I'm sort of most grateful for. If I can work with writers that are half that good for the rest of my career, I'll be happy, because it's hard to find really, really great writing sometimes.
In Guardians Volume 2, does Kraglin have an expanded role, or how is his role different from the first Guardians?
Yeah, Kraglin is, I haven't seen the movie yet, so I don't know what all is in there. But I do know, I can say that Kraglin does have an expanded role. The movie takes place just a couple of months after the first movie ends, and the Ravagers are kind of wondering why Yondu hasn't gone hard after Peter Quill to get him back for double crossing him at the end of the movie, and so the Ravagers are starting to get a little anxious and talk about mutiny, and Kraglin is sort of caught up in the middle of that. But I have a lot more to do. It was nice.
Do you have a favorite film of all time?
I do have a favorite film of all time. It's a very small, low budget Robert Altman movie from the early 70s. Called California Split, with Elliot Gould and George Segal. And I love it for many, many reasons.
Well, Sean, thank you so much for taking the time. I'll let you go, but we'll see you in April, and excited to have you back home.
Excellent. I'm really looking forward to it. Hey, Kevin.
Hey, Michael. I appreciate you taking the time to talk, and let's get right into it here. You were at St. Louis Wizard World Comic Con a couple of years ago. I saw your panel with Jason Mewes, and it looks like you guys just have a blast doing this stuff.
Is that the one where I rode him like a pony?
Yeah, you were doing all sorts of stuff, man. It was hilarious.
Oh, my God, what a dork. We were two complete idiots up there. It was so much fun.
Oh, my
God. We had a blast, an absolute blast, yeah. As a matter of fact, yeah. Not to interrupt you, but I'm going to interrupt you anyway. I think that's actually the convention that I revealed unexpectedly James Gunn's personal phone number.
No, at the St. Louis Wizard World?
Is that the St. Yeah, wasn't the St. Louis Wizard World? And he wasn't at home, and his pickup picked it up, and he said, "Hi, you have reached blah, 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 blah number."
That was a couple of years ago, but I think you're 100% correct.
That was the one, and he had to change his number.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah, that's so. There you have it. We never know what's going to occur.
That's awesome.
And that was the one that he called me up and he said, "Dude, you just gave my number." I said, "I didn't give you a number out. Your answering machine gave you a number out." Don't blame me. You should answer my calls when I call you. From now on, he always answers my calls. He's always afraid. Oh, my God, I better answer the call.
Oh, my gosh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Speaking of having fun, I see the videos you post online. I saw that you were at the Stan Lee roast, and you were there with Sean Gunn, and you guys were kind of doing some incognito behind-the-scenes Facebook Live stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I actually talked to Sean last week, and I asked him if you guys got in any trouble on the set of Guardians, and he says that he's the good one and that you're the troublemaker. What do you think about that?
Depends on what perspective you're looking from. You know, if you're Sean Gunn, everything you do is good. But obviously that's not true. I'm the good one. He's the bad one. He's the undercover bad guy. He's the nice, good cop, bad cop.
Yeah.
The bad cops are usually the nice guys. So they get to play the opposite. So the good cops are usually the culprits.
Awesome. Well, yeah, that's what I figured. I figured he was probably lying to me about it. But going back to Wizard World, you guys always have a lot of fun there. I remember this was a couple of years ago, so I know you've been busy since then. But you had a Tom Servo robot that's from Mystery Science Theater at your booth. And I took a picture of it and you shared it on Facebook and everyone loved seeing you with that. You know, there's always stuff like that, interacting with the fans, stuff you don't expect, meeting people,
learning
new things. What are some of your favorite parts about doing these shows?
Oh, when the Star Wars robots come up to me and we have a conversation. You know, the little short one, the little
R2-D2.
There's R2-D2, yeah. And then there's C-3PO. I never see him, but I always see R2-D2.
Yeah,
he comes up all the time. He never ages. He looks the same. I mean, man, I got to tell you, if I knew what that guy ate to make him so, he looks the same, exactly the same. You know, you watch the movie today, and he looks exactly the same.
Crazy, huh? I don't know how that works.
I know, it's nuts.
So, do you keep up with James Gunn on Twitter? Because I'll tell you what, yesterday there were at least two people that asked James Gunn about you. And, you know, someone made a little claymation figure of you and said they were so proud of it.
Oh, did they?
And then James Gunn replied back and said, "Oh, no, that looks way too good to be Michael Rooker." I mean, he's jabbing you on there all the time.
You know what? I got to go onto his Twitter because I hear he does that a lot. I'm going to have to get back at him somehow.
You've got to. But
somehow.
But, you know, you can really tell you guys are a big family. I mean, obviously, you've worked with James Gunn for a long time now in films, and you guys have become close friends. And tell me a little bit about the camaraderie on set. You guys wrapped Guardians 2 last summer. What was that like working with everybody again?
So lovely and sweet and abusive. It's horrible. It's horrible. he treats me mean, and for some reason I laugh. I like it, you know. He's such a, you know what? In all seriousness, he's a great guy to work with and work for, you know, as the director and producers, you know, that I've been on this project. So he's a great boss. He lets me basically. I don't know if he lets me do what I want to do. He just allows me to go and do what I want to do. And he fixes it in the editing room, for goodness sake, you know. Because, I mean, there's no telling what's going to come out of my mouth, you know, even with scripted materials. So we have a blast no matter what.
Let me ask you this, because I asked Sean Gunn, I said, did you guys get into trouble at all on the Guardian set? And that's when he said, well, I'm the good one. I never do anything bad. It's Rooker. So let me ask you, do you have any fun stories from this last film or anything crazy, any pranks you guys pulled?
Guardians Volume 2, there's no pranking at all. I mean, we're totally dead serious in that project. honest. I mean, I wouldn't lie to you. No, not at all. I would never tell a fib.
I'm ever. Sure nothing goes on the set at all, huh?
Nothing goes on. Nothing at all goes on the set. No, not at all.
All right. Well, I'll leave it at that then. I'm trying to get something out of you guys, but. Let me ask you this. So you've been a part of so many fandoms.
Yeah.
You've been a part of the View Askew stuff with Kevin Smith and Jason Mewes. You've been a part of Walking Dead, but you've been able to reach so many fans and these huge followings. So how does the Marvel one compare, seeing as that this is a huge multi-billion-dollar property? Is it different, or how does that compare to the other fandoms?
You know, the fan bases of all of these projects you're talking about, there's a lot of spillover. So sure. The Walking Dead people are a big Guardians fans, and vice versa, and Mallrats. I mean, all of these projects sort of have the same sci-fi action oriented kind of a fan base. You know, when you're doing a movie, you're always thinking of your what your demographic's going to be, right?
Sure.
I think Guardians of the Galaxy, their demographics blew everyone out of the water. I mean, small two-year-olds were watching it and digging it, and the 92-year-olds were.
Right.
So, and everyone in between. And I saw the movie with the audience for the first time, and then we had some interviews afterwards. And I my comment was, you're going to have to see this movie at least four, maybe five times. And you're going to want to see it four and five times. And
awesome.
And because you it takes that much time to actually sometimes get the punchline, because people are laughing over the punchline. And it was just a blast to watch the movie with an audience. And the same thing with Kevin's movies and The Walking Dead. There are some humorous moments, but you know, but the fans are all, I mean, they're interlocking, you know.
Yeah.
I like that a lot.
Talking about another project you have, the Belko Experiment. I know James Gunn wrote and produced that. What was it like working on that movie?
It was a wee bit messy. I mean, you know, you weren't sure what you were slipping on that tile floor, you know, at times. It was a very dangerous set. I mean, your head could explode at any second. You know, it was one of those things. We were in Colombia, and it was a beautiful, I mean, it was the best food I had ever eaten in such a long time. I'm a big foodie. I crave going and finding new restaurants and experiencing the international language, which is, I think, our differences make up so much of why I love going and visiting other places and other restaurants and experiencing the cuisine. So yeah, and that was a beautiful thing. But down there, I mean, we were stuck in that office, and yeah, it got a little messy at times.
Have you been able to see the film yet at a screening?
Yeah, I saw it.
Would you say it's, is it horror? Is it comedy? A little bit of both? What's the tone of the movie?
You know what? He does a lot of that. You know, we did it in Slither.
Yeah.
I did a movie in, called Slither, and the is a horror movie, and it had a big dose of comedy. And it was really, you know what? It wasn't even a horror movie. I thought it was an odd kind of three-way love affair comedy that was a bit violent. And, you know, it had worms and stuff and crazy alien creatures. It was a very, you know, all of his movies end up having that sardonic humor thing play a role in the whole makeup of the movie. Yeah. Whether it's action or horror or whatever, the comedy is always, the comedy is based on the, not yuck, yuck, every other phrase has to be a joke kind of writing. His comedy ends up being the kind that I like primarily is the kind that comes out of the situation. And that's sort of what his stuff is all about too.
Sure, absolutely. Going back to Slither, that was your first film with James Gunn, right?
Yes, it was, yeah.
Was that where you met him?
That's where I met him. I went in and had a meeting. We read the script a little bit. And, yeah, ended up getting the role. And so I was a happy camper. He had been a big fan of my work. So he wanted to, you know, had the casting people call in all his favorite actors. And so I ended up getting a holler and went in and said hi.
I know that it would be hard to pick just one, but do you have a personal favorite role of yours or a project that you loved working on?
It is. It is almost impossible to pick just one.
Sure.
But boy, oh boy, I've been having such a great time on the Guardians series here, the James Gunn's Guardians of the Galaxy. First one, we just finished the second one. It's going to be out in May 5th. And that'll be out really soon. The Belko experiment is also a James Gunn thing. So I'm excited for both of those. And I did another project. It's about the birthing of jazz. It's been so long now. It's been about 2 years. So I'm hoping this little project is going to come out fairly soon.
Sure, that's Bolden with Ian McShane.
Yeah, yeah, Bolden. That should be coming out sometime soon as well. So.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Well, Michael, I appreciate your time.
It's been a pleasure to be involved with talking about the project.
Well, we're looking forward to Belko in March and, of course, Guardians in May. But in between, we'll see you at Wizard World St. Louis in April.
We'll see you there, bro.
Have a great day. Bye-bye.